This is New Hampshire Public Radio. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Behind its quaint town greens and charming historic cities, northern New England is experiencing a staggering rise in heroin addiction. Mind-boggling is how one official describes the jump he's seen over the past 10 years. And when you look at the numbers, you can see why. In New Hampshire, for example, a decade ago, about 7 or 8 people died each year from heroin overdose. That number was up to almost 50 in 2011 and almost 40 last year. Meanwhile, law enforcement in New Hampshire, Maine, and Vermont say they're not only responding to overdose calls and trying to catch heroin dealers, officers are also reacting to a spike in heroin-related crime as more users resort to robbery to fund their habits. There's general agreement about what's fueling this jump. Many say it's because the cost of other addictive drugs like painkillers has gone up, so users switch to heroin, which has always been a much cheaper drug. But the region's communities are struggling with how to respond, given how quickly the heroin problem has expanded and given limited resources to deal with it. This hour in The Exchange, Northern New England's growing heroin habit and efforts to slow its rising toll. Let's hear from you. Do you have any connection to this issue, either as a former addict or a family member of an addict, or someone who's seen this heroin spike in your line of work? What do you think is the cause, and what do you think is the most important action that the region could take? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests with us in studio. Sheriff Scott Hilliard is here. He's sheriff at Merrimack County. He's been in law enforcement for 33 years. And Sheriff Hilliard, it's nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Also with us, Dr. Ben Nordstrom, Assistant Professor of Psychiatry, Direction of Addiction Services at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center. And Dr. Nordstrom, good to have you, too. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us, Tim Rourke, Chair of the Governor's Commission on Alcohol and Other Drugs. He's also Director of Program and Substance Use Disorders for the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation. And Tim Rourke, welcome back. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you.
Well, and Tim, I want to start with you. What are you seeing in terms of heroin addiction here in New Hampshire?
Well, I think, again, as you alluded in the introduction, it is on the rise, so the news is not good. As we look at substances across the spectrum in terms of different kinds of drugs, as other drugs become more expensive or harder to access, heroin has become an inexpensive alternative, particularly as a state that has seen a rise in prescription drug abuse over the last few years. There's been a lot of emphasis on reducing access, prescription drug takebacks, things of that nature. As prescription drug abuse has gone down, heroin has become the alternative that people have sought. And obviously those who deal in that drug know that as well and are bringing to the markets in New England and in New Hampshire inexpensive heroin that's readily available. So it's become an alternative that is really beginning to crop as the next emergent crisis that we're going to have to address in the opioid front.
Wow. And, you know, I've heard people say what you say, that it's cheaper. How much cheaper is it? I mean, how much does it cost, and why is it so cheap?
I don't know the exact amount. I'd look maybe to the sheriff on that perspective. I think it is significantly cheaper, and I think partially because it's supply and demand. Prescription drug supplies are limited. Even though there are diversion opportunities to divert prescription drugs from the market, those supplies are limited.
We've tightened up on that a lot.
Cost. Correct, correct. And so heroin is much more readily available. It's less expensive to produce. Doesn't come with some of the other challenges in terms of because there's no other market to divert it from. And again, I think flooding the market with it lowers the price. And that becomes a draw for folks for whom economics is part of the driver of how they access substances.
Yeah, Sheriff Hilliard, do you want to jump in there?
Yeah, Tim hit it right on the head. I mean, it's readily available. It's cheap. You know, you can buy a bindle of heroin on the street for $20. You know, and they're referred to as bindles. But
yeah, what is a bindle?
Well, it's a small, like cellophane wrapped. It depends on how it is, and it's material inside there that you either snort, liquefy, or powder, smoke. There's different ways of ingesting it, but Tim really hits on something, Laura, that's important, and that is that, you know, you're going to talk in your program about the difference in drugs, and you know what's today's drug of choice, but prescription drugs because we've introduced some legislation that's helped us stop the doctor shopping. Tim's exactly right, and it's exploding on the heroin side, and it's concerning for us, all of us.
Right, and I've heard people say, and I'll ask you, I think, Dr. Nordstrom, that heroin is one of the most addictive drugs in the world. What do you think?
It is. When studies have been done that looked at the number of people who try heroin who then go on to become addicted to it, of the illicit drugs, it is probably the most addictive. It's around a quarter.
The most.
It's about a quarter of people who try heroin actually end up getting dependent on it. So that exceeds cocaine, that exceeds marijuana, that exceeds basically everything else.
What makes it like that?
It's a little hard to know. I think it's hard to disaggregate what's the intrinsic quality of the drug from the sort of person who experiments with it in the first place. But one of the things about heroin that makes it different is that it's actually a drug called diacetylmorphine. And it's morphine that has been transformed so that it gets across the barrier into your brain much more readily than other opiates. And so one of the things that we have learned about addiction over the years is that the speed at which a drug gets into your brain has a lot to do with how reinforcing and how addictive it is. And heroin was specifically designed to get into the brain as rapidly as possible.
And what are you seeing on the hospital and healthcare and Dr. Nordstrom? I talked about the overdose deaths going way up. From what I've read, hospital emergency rooms are really dealing with this as well.
Absolutely. And I think the other gentlemen here have really hit the nail on the head. Heroin is more potent than the other prescription drugs. It gets into your brain faster than the other prescription drugs that people are have been abusing. And it's cheaper on a effective dose basis than these other drugs. And it's just something where people get tolerant very, very quickly to the opiates when they're misusing them. And they need ever-increasing doses in order to feel high. And then as a result, in order to make this as economically feasible for them as possible, they switch to the cheapest and most efficient way of using. And unfortunately, that really is heroin.
Tim, you want to jump in there?
And I was going to add, I spoke with a physician out of Maine last week who also noted, the challenge with heroin, particularly in the medical environment, is that the opportunity to save someone from a heroin overdose is pretty slim. Particularly, we look at mortality around opiates. The number of people in the state of New Hampshire who have died of drug overdoses, it was 200 in 2011. It's 164 in 2012. That's most recent data from the Medical Examiner. Of the drugs that were involved in those overdose deaths in 2012, heroin was the top. And that's the other challenge is with even prescription drugs or other opiate overdoses, the window of time at which an emergency intervention could be done that can save that individual's life might be a little longer. But with heroin, very often, as this one physician said to me, they don't make it to the ER.
Wow.
So the opportunity to intervene and potentially save them in an overdose is very limited.
Wow, it's really scary. Well, I want to invite our listeners to join us, and then I've got a lot more to ask you gentlemen about. The number here in the exchange for you to join us on this tough topic today is 1-800-892-6477. If you have any personal connection with this issue of a rise in heroin abuse here in northern New England, either you're a former addict yourself or the family member of an addict or someone who's seen this heroin spike in your line of work, as our guests have, why do you think this is the case that we see heroin use rising so much? And what do you think is the most important action that the Northern New England states could take to combat this? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And guys, let's take a call. This is Aaron in Concord. Hi, Aaron. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Well, I just wanted to bring up the fact I'm personally a recovering addict myself. I attend the methadone clinic down in Concord and take the Suboxone there. But I've noticed that there really aren't many options available for addicts in the state of New Hampshire. Really, you gotta, unless you have a lot of money and great health coverage, you're really relegated to committing a felony and being forced by the state to go to a state-run treatment program, and that's just not really a great viable option. Whereas in Massachusetts, you can go to rehab for free if you don't have health coverage.
Can I ask you a quick question, Aaron?
Sure.
I'm really glad you called, and congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. As
we're hearing, this is bad stuff. What was it that made you decide to stop?
The one and only thing that can actually make an addict stop, and that's the desire to not live the life that I lived anymore. Basically, with, as they say, I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. Mm. You know, you wake up every day feeling like garbage, and, you know, it costs $300 a day just to feel like a normal person, and I couldn't take that anymore, so I decided to gather up $350 and go down to the methadone clinic and start a Suboxone regimen that cost me $25 every single day.
Wow.
In order to get better. And I can't, you know, complain, because that's a lot less than what it was costing me on the street. And, I mean, in the less than a year I've been there, I've started my own business here in downtown Concord. And, you know, I've got all my bills caught up, my rent's caught up, and, you know, it's just a matter of wanting to get better. But you also need to have an avenue to get treatment, and that's very, very difficult and or very, very expensive here in the state of New Hampshire.
Aaron, so glad you called, and good luck to you. And I think I want to hear from all of you on this, but you first, I think, Tim, again, since you're chair of the Governor's Commission on Alcohol and Other Drugs, he said not a lot of options for addicts unless you have terrific health insurance.
He's right, and again, I just want to congratulate Aaron on his recovery and wish him well. I think in the state of New Hampshire, our publicly financed treatment system has the capacity to treat between 4% and 6% of the residents in the state of New Hampshire, we believe, have a substance use disorder, regardless of whether it's opiate addiction or another. So our ability to treat the population that is really in need of treatment is incredibly limited. Cost is certainly a barrier because funding is limited, that limits the availability of residential beds or outpatients. So we've got treatment centers with wait lists and things of that nature. You know, there's probably four or five different shows in many of the topics that Aaron talked about. We, you know, particularly looking at healthcare access, certainly with healthcare reform, there are parity provisions that provide better financing for substance abuse treatment. So certainly expanded Medicaid and issues around health reform are quite key in the conversation on how do you get at treatment access. But it is very limited, and that's a challenge.
All right. And there are a couple other points that Aaron brought up that I want to ask you about, Sheriff Hilliard, and you, Dr. Nordstrom. But we have to take a super short break, so we'll be right back. We're going to check in with our June membership drive.
Good morning. It's 9:19. This is New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Rick Ganley alongside Virginia Prescott, and we are welcoming you to our short June fun drive. We'd love to hear from you right now. The number 1-888-805-6477.
And this short is the order of the day. We do have a flash match going on right now and for the next 10 minutes. A dollar-for-dollar match up to $500. These matching dollars are being offered by an anonymous exchange fan. So that means that your gift of $50 a month becomes $100 with match money. $120 membership gifts becomes $240. So you get the idea. That means that New Hampshire Public Radio gets more money to pay for the exchange. Call us now at 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org. Take advantage of this quick 10-minute flash match to double your money for NHPR.
And take advantage of the chance to get your name in the hat for two great giveaways during the drive. One is for an overnight trip to Tanglewood to see Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. The other, a five-night trip to Lisbon, Portugal. Make your contribution right now and be entered into both giveaways. In fact, this is the final day to be able to do that. Two chances to win Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me with an overnight stay, and also a five-night trip stay in Lisbon, Portugal with airfare. This is the chance to get entered into both. 1-888-805-6477 or go online to nhpr.org.
NHPR depends on listeners for more than 40% of our operating budget, so your ongoing financial support is now more important than ever, and especially for the next 9 minutes when we have this flash match on the table. Dollar for dollar match. Call us now at 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Every contribution in the next 9 minutes you'll be matched dollar for dollar. Double the buying power of your contribution right now. Help pay for the exchange right here in New Hampshire. Give now. Help to earn every matching dollar. Call 1-888-805-6477. 6477. Go online to nhpr.org.
How much to give? We always recommend picking an amount that fits your budget. And of course, a good suggestion might be, if you listen to NHPR every day, how about a dollar a day? $365. If you divide that by all of your listening, it really comes out to be a great value, and it's a great help to New Hampshire Public Radio, especially right now, and especially to help pay for programs like The Exchange that you depend on day in and day out. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org is the number to call.
Yeah, and support to NHPR, as Virginia said, and the way that you use New Hampshire Public Radio. Do you listen to Morning Edition? Do you listen to The Exchange? Do you catch All Things Considered in the afternoon? Maybe a dollar a day makes sense for you. Maybe $120 or $200 over the course of the year makes sense to you. Whatever that works out for you, give us a call now, 1-888-805-6477. When you do, you'll be entered to win two great giveaways, a trip to see Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me live at Tanglewood, or you can also win a five-night trip to Lisbon, Portugal. Either way, get your name in the hat, 1-888-805-6477, or go online to nhpr.org.
And get into this flash match. Take advantage of this. We have a dollar-for-dollar match for the next 8 minutes now, or 7.5 minutes. Call us at 1-888-805-6477, or make a donation online at nhpr.org for the next 7 minutes. Your dollars will be matched dollar-for-dollar, going that much further to help New Hampshire Public Radio and the new service that you depend on. Please call us now at 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
What a great time to become a new member of New Hampshire Public Radio. If you've never contributed before, this is a perfect time to do it while this flash match is in effect. Every dollar contributed goes that much further. Dollar for dollar match right now for the next several minutes. Your chance to become a new member of New Hampshire Public Radio and do that much more good. We'll also send you the member card when you contribute at the $120 level. That member card helping to pay for itself with two-for-ones all over the state and online. 1-888-805-6477 is the number to call, or go to nhpr.org.
It's a great time to contribute to New Hampshire Public Radio, especially if you're a fan of The Exchange, especially if you listen to and depend upon Laura Kanoy and all of her guests to interpret, to analyze, to discuss what's going on in the state. And we have this flash match going on for the next 6 minutes, and we have these two drawings to get your name into. Call us at 1-888-805-6477. Make a donation online at nhpr.org. And thank you.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and the Monadnock Food Co-op, Cypress Street, downtown Keene, a full-service grocery store celebrating their grand opening June 20th to the 22nd. Everyone welcome, monadnockfood.coop. From the Casino Ballroom at Hampton Beach, presenting the 10-voice a cappella group Straight No Chaser, Friday, June 21st at 8 p.m. Tickets and information online at casinoballroom.com. And Nathan Wexler and Company Professionals, providing comprehensive audit, accounting, tax, and business advisory services to business and nonprofits, offices in Concord and Lebanon. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the alarming rise in heroin use in northern New England. We invite you to join us. 1-800-892-6477. Your thoughts, your personal experiences with this issue, why you think heroin abuse is up so much, and what you think might help curb its toll here in northern New England. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests: Tim Rourke, chair of the Governor's Commission on Alcohol and Other Drugs, also director of program and substance use disorders for the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation. Scott Hilliard is also here, Merrimack County Sheriff. He's been in law enforcement for 33 years. And Dr. Ben Nordstrom, Assistant Professor of Psychiatry and Director of Addiction Services at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center. One more time, that exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, before we go back to our listeners, I did want to follow up on a couple points that Aaron, our earlier caller, made. And Sheriff Hilliard, he talked about how, in his words, there are not a lot of options for addicts unless you have excellent health insurance. And Aaron told us how he turned his life around. Tim described how there are very few public treatment programs available here in the Granite State. So when you arrest somebody, Sheriff Hilliard, for, you know, substance abuse, and you say, look, buddy, you got a problem, and he says, you're right, Sheriff, I got a problem, Where do you put them?
Well, you know, unfortunately, Laura, Aaron makes a great point. And I think he started off his point by saying the only other solution is to commit a crime and get locked up. And precisely what happens is that does happen. The point that I'd like to make, Laura, is that when we lock somebody up who has an addiction issue in the Merrimack County Jail or any jail, we lock them up. There are very few resources. They might be NA or some counseling
NA
available.
NA is like Narcotics Anonymous.
Narcotics Anonymous. But there are limited resources. So when we lock them up, they're addicted. When they go to court, they finish their sentence, they get out. As an addict said to me, I'm still addicted. And there are no, virtually no resources unless, as Aaron made a good point, unless you have boatloads of money or you have health insurance, a good health insurance program.
So what do you do about that?
Well, to be candid with you, people get out and they go back to using, even though they've been in jail for maybe as long as 8 or 9 months. They get out, they're still addicted, there's still a problem, and you know, they'll participate meaningful in the programs that are at the jail, like Narcotics Anonymous or group counseling programs, and even talk to a counselor, addiction counselors at the jail. At least in Merrimack County, we have them. But unfortunately, it's you're trying to correct the problem that you don't have the resources to correct.
Wow. And one other thing that Aaron mentioned, I'll turn to you, Dr. Nordstrom. He said he was doing well thanks to a methadone clinic. A couple times he used the word Suboxone. I'm not really sure what that is. Can you, first of all, tell us what Suboxone is? But second of all, I've also heard that methadone itself can sometimes be a problem. I'm wondering if you can talk
absolutely
about that as well.
So there are about 3 drugs that have been FDA approved for use in opioid dependents. Aaron mentioned 2 of them. The first is methadone. That's the one that's been around the longest since the mid-60s. It was actually around before that as a pain medicine, but then started being used for the treatment of opioid dependents starting in the mid-60s. And it's an opioid just like any of these other opioids that people get on a daily basis. It has a long half-life, so it doesn't come out of their system so quickly, which means that as long as they're taking a dose a day, they don't go into withdrawal.
And they feel good.
And they feel well. They feel normal. And then by increasing the dose, you can actually use it to prevent people from being able to get high on other opiates. So that's methadone. Then Aaron mentioned that he's taking Suboxone, which is the trade name for the drug buprenorphine, and it's actually added to another medicine called Naloxone to make the Suboxone tablets. And buprenorphine is sort of methadone 2.0.
I see.
It is also a long half-life drug, stops people from going into withdrawal, but then it actually outcompetes the other opioids at the level of the receptor in your brain, so that once you take that the buprenorphine, the Suboxone, if you were to take heroin, if you were to take oxycodone, you wouldn't feel it. And it is what's called a partial agonist, so it doesn't really get people high.
So it almost cures you, it sounds like. I don't want to be too optimistic, but it kind of prevents you from getting high.
Well, and I think that, again, the caller brought up an interesting point there when he talked about all the other changes he's made in his life. What this medication allows you to do is use your time better. And it isn't a cure, but it allows for people to get into recovery. It is not recovery in a pill form, but by getting people off that treadmill where they're just running and running and running to get the drugs that they need, it gives them all that time back that then they can use to really get into recovery as a lifestyle change, a comprehensive lifestyle change, which sounds like Aaron, to his great credit, has done.
Got it. All right. Well, again, Aaron, thanks for that call. And the number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And back to our listeners, gentlemen. Lee is waiting in Keene. Hi, Lee. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Laura. This is a topic I'm just really passionate about. I've been an opiate addict now for almost 13 years. I didn't start using until I was 30 years old. And, you know, by that time I was a registered nurse. you know, had a good job. I actually worked on a chemical dependency unit and ended up falling into a, you know, a really bad, you know, pattern of addiction due to different life circumstances. I went to multiple detoxes for, you know, 4 or 5 days at a time, you know, to kind of put a little Band-Aid on it. I feel a little bit better, but, you know, it never really solved my problem. I was on opiate maintenance. I was on a methadone clinic for 4 years. Then I transitioned to Suboxone for another 4 years and ended up relapsing because even though I was on those maintenance programs, I never really worked a program or, you know, worked on myself and the underlying issues.
That's exactly what Dr. Nordstrom was just talking about, right, Lee?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, and it wasn't until, you know, they say jails, institutions, and death. Well, I experienced jail. I experienced many institutions. And it wasn't until I was so desperate and finally, you know, was able to, you know, hand my will over and I admitted myself into the Phoenix House in Keene, New Hampshire to a 28-day program where I was able to actually, you know, being a nurse, and having the education, you know, I thought I knew it all and I could, you know, handle this. And,
sure.
You know, I was, you know, old enough to know better and I had, you know, the education and the tools to, you know, deal with it. So I thought, but it, like I said, it wasn't until I came to the Phoenix House and decided to do, you know, an extended program and with their, you know, the excellent, you know, the counselors and the programs and really kind of learning about myself, and being pushed to do things outside of my comfort zone that, you know, I finally feel like I have a good step on the path to recovery.
Can I ask you a quick question if I could? I'm so glad you called. And like I said to Aaron, congratulations. Aaron mentioned that it's really hard to pay for these types of programs. Is Phoenix House a nonprofit? I mean, can you go there for free or did you have to have some financial resources to pay for that?
Luckily, I did have health insurance, you know, which I could totally relate to what Aaron was saying because I had a younger brother who was 13 years younger than I was, and we both were addicted to heroin. And he, on the opposite end of the spectrum, did not have any insurance. So where I was able to put myself into a methadone clinic and go on Suboxone and go into different detoxes. He, on the other hand, was not. Unfortunately, his end was a lot different than mine. In 2010, he took his own life.
Oh, sorry, Lee.
Due to drug addiction. And a lot of that, I do, you know, I do feel that if he had the resources and had some sort of insurance or if there were more programs out there for addicts. I mean, it's an epidemic in our country. And instead of, you know, more programs being put in place, they're being taken away and there's cutbacks. And it's just really unfortunate that people that, you know, really want help cannot get it. You know, he was forced to go to Massachusetts and...
like Aaron mentioned that. Yeah.
You know, and to get help. And it's just, it's sad. And the number of people I see that are using that are younger and younger, it's just...
It's rising. It's what we've heard. Lee, hang on, okay, because your call, and boy, I'm sorry about your brother. That's horrible. A couple questions that come out of this from Lee's call, and thanks again, Lee. To you, I think, Sheriff Hilliard, you know what's one thing that's interesting to me about this call is a lot of the stories we hear are about young men, you know, late teens, early 20s. Here's Lee. She said she started when she was 30. Sure. She was addicted for 8 years. So here she's, you know, she's almost 40. She's female. Mm. What are you seeing in terms of who is getting into trouble with this drug?
Well, that's interesting because, and I wanted to talk to Tim and Dr. Nordstrom about this in a bit, because I think we're now seeing people who are older who are using the, let's start there. The second thing that I've been seeing is healthcare professionals who are actually treating people in addiction centers. Our agency, our detectives have investigated a number of nurses, you know, not a large number, but a number of nurses, surprisingly to me, and all on the larger end of the age scale. So it's changing. The dynamics of age are drastically changing.
Wow. Well, good luck to you, Lee. Thanks for calling. And let's go to Mark in Portsmouth. Hi, Mark. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Laura, well, I'll apologize up front because I'm going to sound a little cruel and heartless, but I don't want my tax dollars going to rehab centers for drug addicts who are just going to putz around with it. And Aaron even proves my point. And Aaron, sir, I have nothing but the greatest of admiration for you because I'm not sure I could do what you did. But the only way a drug addict gets off it is they have to want to get off it more than they want to stay on it. And he took a $300 a day habit and he got off it. And he says it all. He wanted off it. He found a way. And the nurse who just spoke, kind of similar, but she wanted off more than she wanted on it. And she eventually found a way.
So
I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah, no, I understand. And there's probably other callers who may be thinking the same thing. I wonder what you think, Tim. You know, this is another point of view. Thank you, Mark, for raising that. He says, look, people who get off because they want to. Why waste tax dollars on people who are just going to, I can't remember his exact words, but keep going around and around?
I think part of the reality, and Lee's call in particular highlights this, is that addiction as a disorder is long-term and chronic. Oftentimes, and I hear this quite often, that people are expecting that someone with a substance use disorder can be just cured. And if they're motivated, if they make better life choices, they can just do the right things and be cured. And that's not how it works. It's a chronic disorder. And so folks who run into trouble with alcohol and other drugs and develop addictive disorders require really life adjustments and supports over the long term. And so resources are needed to do that. The other piece I would say is that tax dollars are going to address the problems that not providing treatment causes. The Department of Corrections is the fourth largest driver of the state budget. The vast majority of people incarcerated in this state have a substance use disorder, and it is their substance use disorder that brought them in. So from an economic standpoint, if we're looking at best use of tax dollars, it would actually be to treat and prevent those problems so that we do not have the revolving door of folks going in and out of the justice system, the courts, more expensive interventions, and increases in public safety costs and things of that nature.
Yeah, I know you want to jump in, Dr. Nestor.
Absolutely. I was just going to echo what Mr. Rourke was saying, that I understand the caller's frustration and that it seems wrong sometimes for people who are getting money taken out of their paychecks and that they see it going to these programs or they just sort of don't feel like society is benefiting from this one person necessarily getting treated. And
how do you tell who is going to benefit and who isn't?
Absolutely. But Mr. Rourke is completely correct when he says that these folks will cost us money one way or the other, and they can cost us money in the criminal justice side of things. Columbia University did a study a number of years ago that showed that of the $38 billion spent, and that's billion with a B, spent on corrections in this country, $30 billion was spent incarcerating drug users. That not only are there criminal justice costs, there's the direct costs of crime from people doing things like the robberies that you alluded to at the top of the show. There's also the health problems that come along, the overdoses. There is the hepatitis C, the HIV transmissions that come about from people using these drugs. There's the endocarditis that comes along with people using these drugs. So these folks are going to cost the taxpayers money one way or the other, and they can cost less or they can cost more. And so sometimes it helps just to sort of look at that fairly dispassionately and put aside one's feelings about whether it's fair.
Well, and Mark, I appreciate the call. You can call too after a very short break. We're going to check in now with our June membership drive.
And this is a very short June fun drive. Good morning. I'm Rick Ganley alongside Regina Prescott, and we are looking forward to hearing from you during this drive. 1-888-805 6477 is the number to call. You can also pledge online at nhpr.org.
And we have a series of hourly goals that are keeping us on track today. Our hourly goal, $2,500 by 10 o'clock. Well, guess what? We have $900 to go. So thank you to everybody who's called so far. We will stay on track with that $900 one phone call at a time to 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
We have got two great drawings up for grabs. When you do contribute today, when you become a member of NHPR, we'll put your name in the hat for an overnight trip to Tanglewood to see Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me later in August. And the other, a five-night trip to Lisbon, Portugal. Make your contribution right now and be entered into both giveaways. That's two chances to win, but you only have today to enter for both of those trips. We'll be pulling the winner for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me overnighter later on today. So get your name in the hat for those two trips. Become a contributor to New Hampshire Public Radio, the news service that you know and love. 1-888-805-6477. That's 1-888-805-6477.
The gap between listener support and federal support is a really big one, and it will not likely ever get smaller. And that's where you come in. Your financial support added with other NHPR listeners is how we pay the bills. And it may sound risky, but we don't think so. We trust you to pitch in a few dollars to pay for the news that you listen to. Now, $800 to go. We have 18 minutes left to do it. Call us now at 1-888-805-6477 or pledge online at nhpr.org.
We have just 18 minutes left to go to raise $800 to keep us on track with this hourly goal. These hourly goals so important in this very, very short drive. We need to stay on track to reach our overall goal in the drive, which ends tomorrow. So what part of that can you help with? Maybe $120, maybe $240, whatever makes sense for you and your budget. 1-888-805-6477.
$600 now left to go on our hourly goal. Thank you so much to Exchange listeners for coming through. Many listeners do choose to support NHPR by giving $1,000 or more. It is a great way to support the station, especially during this short June fund drive. And the money that you give is going to ensure that NHPR will always be here for you and all of New Hampshire. We're ticking down here. What have we got? $500 left to go in 17 minutes. Call now at 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org is where you can make your secure online pledge.
Support now and you'll be entered in for two great giveaways. One, that overnight trip to Tanglewood to see Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, where you'll get to meet and greet the cast. The other, a five-night trip to Lisbon, Portugal, with great activities for historic tours and art gallery visits and opportunities to sample unique local and regional foods and wines. Wow, what a fantastic trip that would be for two. But you can't win it if you're not in it. Now, you don't have to pledge to be entered, but we sure hope that you do. You can do that at 1-888-805-6477. That's the number to call. You can get all the details and also become a member of NHPR online at nhpr.org. And thanks.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and the Lexus CT Hybrid with a combined EPA rated 42 mpg. Actual mileage will vary. Lexus.com/CT. From Fuller Gardens, located on the seacoast in Northampton, New Hampshire, where visitors can enjoy an estate botanical garden 7 days a week. Online at fullergardens.org. And Seacoast Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, orthopedics and team physicians for the UNH Wildcats, providing repair for ACL and rotator cuff tears for UNH athletes. SOSmed.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the alarming jump in heroin use in northern New England, what's behind it, how it's affecting individuals and families. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Tim Rourke, Sheriff Hilliard, Dr. Nordstrom, let's go right back to our listeners. And Sarah's waiting in Greenville. Hi, Sarah, you're on the air. Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. Is that Sam? Go ahead, Sam.
Yep, thanks. I have a question, but I'd like to give you some background real quick. I'm a former heroin addict and other drugs as well. I've been clean now for 11 years, almost 12 actually. And, I did try methadone. I was in a methadone clinic for a while, and it was too similar to heroin for me to make that break that I think I needed. And actually what I feel helped me the most with my addiction was marijuana. I used it, I guess you could say, medicinally in this case. I was able to break my addiction. Marijuana not having a physically addicting aspect to it. I was able to get off of that as well. But its ability to calm the nerves and to relax, well, me, it made it easier to get off heroin completely.
Well,
I'm wondering if there's any research into that, or if the debate about medicinal use of marijuana, if anyone's taking into account its properties and maybe helping people get off of harder drugs.
Yeah, Sam, thanks a lot for calling in. And certainly that's being debated right now in the legislature. Tim Rourke, do you know anything about this?
Sure. You know, I don't know that there's been specific research relative to the use of cannabis or its derivatives around similar to methadone or other drugs. You know, the conversation around marijuana as a medicine itself, I think it's important to understand that marijuana is a plant. It's not a medicine, no more than the poppy plant, which is the derivative where heroin and a lot of opioids come from. So we're talking about there might be parts of marijuana, chemicals within marijuana have medicinal purposes. But those are being looked at not for services relative to offsetting treatment symptoms that I'm aware of.
Okay. Well, Sam, I'm glad you're doing better, and thanks for calling in. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Here's a Facebook comment from Jennifer. She says, I work in the state lab that analyzes drug evidence. We have seen a rise in heroin submissions since oxycodone tablets were reformulated a couple of years ago. Jennifer says, I suspect when that happened, heroin became an easier and cheaper alternative. We talked about that a little bit earlier, Dr. Nordstrom, but not that oxycodone and other painkillers have gotten more expensive. But she's right. I also read that oxycodone had actually been reformulated to make it less addictive or able to be abused.
That's been tried at a couple of points, that drugs that have addiction liability are reformulated so that they have a slower release, so that they get into your blood slower and therefore into your brain slower. And that was that's long been a technique to reduce diversion of these substances.
So we're seeing that more and more with some of these
absolutely
painkillers.
Or other controlled substances. Now, the difficulty is folks are very clever at getting around this.
Really?
And they are very, very good at figuring out ways to sort of beat the drug company's logic. And so people find a way. The creativity that this population shows is astounding.
So a way to unformulate undo the reformulation? Is that what you're saying?
Or get around the science behind the delayed release.
All right. Well, thanks for that comment, Jennifer. And back to the phones. Melissa's in Dublin. Hi, Melissa. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Melissa Chickering, and I have the pleasure of running the adolescent program out of Phoenix House in Dublin, New Hampshire.
Sure.
And I really appreciate you guys talking on this topic today. It's such an important topic. One of the things that I appreciated hearing about was the lack of services in the state, and I guess I wanted to take a short opportunity to also highlight the lack of services for adolescents in the state. We currently are the only adolescent residential treatment program long-term that's serving adolescents in the state, and we have 12 beds, 4 female beds and 8 male beds, which means that currently in the state, only 4 adolescent females can get residential substance abuse treatment at a given time. With that being said, there are so many barriers to kids and adults getting into treatment that even with the extreme lack of services, there are major census issues, and it's been very difficult to fill those beds or even help the kids, even though there's this great need. And we have also seen extremely high numbers of kids using IV heroin and opiates, painkillers. It's probably actually our number one problem.
So you got 12 beds, Melissa, for all the teenagers in the state who may have this problem. What do you do when some, you know, distraught parent calls you and says, you know, I need to get my son to Phoenix House and there's no room?
At this point, the parents really have very few choices. Their choice is to have their child arrested. The quickest and fastest way to get treatment services for your child is to go through the legal system.
Yeah, Sheriff Hilliard said that earlier. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we do have some beds available for kids that don't have an adolescent court order, but they're really hard to access. And so it's much easier to access services, not only through our program, but also outpatient services, IOP, like all the different levels of care, with some legal supports in place. But asking somebody to, you know, call the police when they're 15, 16, 17-year-old is a difficult thing.
Can I ask you one quick question, Melissa? This came up earlier with one of our callers, Mark, who said, look, you know, I don't want my tax dollars going toward people who are, you know, may not recover, who, you know, got into this mess themselves and may not want to get out of this mess. There's no, you know, guarantee that all these dollars spent on recovery are going to work. I wonder what you think about that as someone who runs a recovery center for teenagers.
I think that's feedback that we often hear in the substance abuse field, and I think Tim Rourke really addressed that well, talking about how much more money taxpayers actually spend when clients don't get treatment. And I think that's especially true for adolescents, because if we intervene early, then those kids aren't then going into the legal system, going into the adult system, like committing those adult crimes. So I think that it seems like we're saving tax dollars by, you know, not spending the money on treatment programs, but actually it creates the opposite. And it costs exponentially more money to put these people in jail or the youth detention center than it does to put them in a treatment program where they can have all this access to services in their families as well.
Okay.
Melissa,
I'm going to let you go because we're running close to the end of the hour. Thank you so much for calling in. I know you want to jump in, Tim, real quick.
Thanks.
There.
And thanks, Melissa, for your call. You know, I think we would be remiss in talking about how complex and difficult this topic is without touching on solutions. And relative to youth treatment, she's absolutely right that we have an even more challenging capacity issue on the children's side. One of the things that's been developing over the last few years is that a collaborative of the Charitable Foundation, the Endowment for Health, the Department of Health and Human Services, and the Department of Education have worked to pull together a children's behavioral health plan for the state of New Hampshire that looks at how we can improve treatment access for substance abuse and mental health services for children, that really also talks about very often there are these financial barriers where, and in the case of Phoenix House, Melissa alluded to it, you know, they have some beds that might be funded through DCYF and other beds that are funded through another funding source. But if a child or a family calls that is not qualified for one of those, they're out of luck. So one of the things that we're looking at is, you know, resources are limited, but there is still room to take the resources we have, use them more efficiently, and utilize best practices to increase the capacity of our existing system. And with kids, that's something we're working on right now.
Well, and since you mentioned kids, and also Melissa mentioned teenagers as well, here's an email that just came in from Marty Bolden. He's director of the Office of Youth Services for the City of Manchester. So he's seeing this too. He says, as the director of a juvenile delinquency diversion program in Manchester, I wonder what provisions for juvenile justice services in health and human services, as the numbers of youth using heroin increases and the number of youth involved in drug-related crime rises. Further, Marty Bolden says, I wonder if Sheriff Hilliard sees an increase in the use of heroin related to the perception of increased gang activity in the state's youth. Let's take that second question first, Sheriff Hilliard.
And absolutely. Marty makes a good point. For those of you in the Capital Region, we're seeing more of gang activity cropping up. I mean, we've always had loose-fitting gangs and that stuff, but intelligence
in Concord,
in the Capital Region, not just Concord. And I think it's important to point out that, and Marty can probably relate to this, is that they see young people see this group environment as the way to access this drug, versus what we see from the adult side, which is when people can't access it, they commit crimes to get money to get access to the drug. So it is a great point. And I know that in Manchester, they're seeing it more. But the Capital Region, and don't think that, I hope our listeners don't think we're exempt from any of this. And you don't see it in the newspaper, Laura. You don't see it on the headlines. You don't hear it on the radio. But those of us in the intelligence, as it relates to crime, are very cautious about watching this.
We heard on the radio right here, and I had not heard that before. You know, Sheriff Hilliard, before we wrap up, I just wanted to get some final thoughts from you, as someone who's been involved in law enforcement for 33 years, that you want the audience to keep in mind as we move forward on this.
Well, first off, thank you. And most importantly, I think alarming to me is the overdose death rate in this state exceeds traffic fatalities. I shared this with Governor Hassan in a conversation. It is alarming. It's scary. And the second quick point I'll make is that this is a quality of life issue. If you don't have a family member or know somebody addicted, it's going to affect you. If your house is burglarized, you talked about the increase in violent crime and robberies as a result of addiction issues. Thank you for the point.
All right. And all of you, we've got to wrap it up there. Thank you so much for being here. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. Checking in real quick now with our June membership drive.
Thank you, Laura. We're doing very well, hearing from all kinds of listeners across the state who are supporting the New Hampshire Public Radio service that they've come to rely upon for incredibly in-depth programming like you just heard with The Exchange. I'm Rick Ganley, alongside Virginia Prescott, looking forward to hearing from you during our very short June Fund Drive. 1-888-805-6477 is the number to call. You can also become a member at nhpr.org.
Rick, we have just $200 to go to meet this hourly goal. Those hourly goals help keep us on track for this June fundraiser. And of course, we know what happens when we get that $200. They'll give us another goal because there's always more programming to support here on New Hampshire Public Radio. But call us now. You can help us meet this goal and go onward to the next one at 1-888-805-6477. Online at nhpr.org. Show your appreciation for the state's only statewide call-in talk program.
$100 now left to go, Virginia. $100 in the next 3 minutes. We can do that when we hear from you now at 1-888-805-6477. When you do make that phone call, you will be entered to win two trips, two great giveaways. One for an overnight trip to Tanglewood to see Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me later on this summer, and another, a five-night trip to Lisbon, Portugal. Make your contribution now. You'll be entered into both giveaways. That's two chances to win with just one phone call. Support the public radio service you love and get entered into those drawings. 1-888-805-6477.
NHPR is commercial-free and listener-supported, which means we're here because you want us here. So this fund drive is a reminder to do your part and sign up as a sustaining member, a one-time contribution.